Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mostly Mets podcast, where we talk mostly about the Mets. This is a mostly outfield edition with the return of Michael Conforto. We will discuss what's going on in the Mets outfield. I'm Toby Hyde with Rob Brender. Maggie Wiggin from SNY.TV will be along with us shortly. Rob, how are you doing today?
Outstanding. I was at a game at PNC Park last night for the first time in my life, and that is an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I want to talk about your top five ballparks. I've been to three of your top five, and I think I have a slightly different ranking of the top major league ballparks in America. So we'll do that at the end of the show, okay?
Yeah, let's definitely do that.
All right, but first, a quick programming note to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting. Just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. And please make sure to rate and review our channel. And be sure to check out the Mike Piazza episode of the Mets Blog Q&A cast. Matt Cerrone talks one-on-one with the Mets legend and soon-to-be Hall of Famer. Definitely give that a listen. It's sitting in top of my podcast queue for my commute to work. So with that, well, with the commute to work out of the way, we'll talk to Maggie Wiggin. Maggie, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. So, Mets outfield. Now, I want to preface this discussion by saying generally conversations about problems of too much talent are not actually problems. They find ways to solve themselves. But right now, it sure feels like the Mets have four guys for three spots. Does it not?
I mean, I suppose it does. I think the bigger issue is that they have three guys for three spots, but none of them want to play one of those spots. So, I mean, I think, you know, Lagares is used really well in his role, but if for whatever reason that is between him and the team, Cespedes really doesn't want to play center, then that's the problem to me, because then they don't really have a center fielder. So,
right.
To me, I feel like they have the personnel are there. It's just a matter of getting them aligned out there in a way that keeps everybody happy and productive and healthy. And there's not really an easy resolution to who plays in center field.
Yeah. Right. I think that qualification is right. The Mets have three corner outfielders and half a center fielder. And in Lagares, and Cespedes right now doesn't feel like he's a center fielder. Rob, you buy that?
Is it fair to ask the question of why? I mean, does it really matter? I guess not. But I'm very curious as to what happened with him. Why Cespedes decided all of a sudden, I don't want to play center field. And if I remember right, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, when he said something to the effect of, I am a center fielder. I was a center fielder in Cuba. So this is no big deal for me. Did he just realize overnight that this isn't working?
Context, no, he's hurt.
The context of what Cespedes said last year was interesting, though, because he had, in previous years, been resistant to being in center field.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the numbers certainly bear out that his skills aren't really at their best in center field. And, you know, he is aware of that, and he has a lot of pride, as he should. And I think there's a combination of health issues, either feeling that his skills are worsened by his health issues, or that on the flip side, that the challenge of being in center field is exacerbating the health problems. Whatever it is, you know, I think he's really starting to kind of regret putting himself in this position where he's expected by a contending team to go out there in center field and play every day.
Could it be the contract? Do either of you guys think it could be the contract? That he knows he's opt out after the year and he wants the value to be its highest?
How does that work? I mean, if he could play center field, his value would be higher. So can you run me through that logic?
No, my logic there is that he just realizes that it just doesn't look so great right now in center field. And maybe he thinks, you know what, if I can get back out to left field full time and I look like a Gold Glover again, like I did a couple of years ago, playing the position I'm most comfortable, I'm going to get an even bigger contract after the year's done.
I could buy the contract argument if his concern is that it's harder for him to stay healthy in center. I think that not so much that his overall defensive numbers are compromised being there. I think just having that flexibility as a player is a value added in free agency. But if he thinks that being in center is going to hurt himself, then that could be a part of it for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's not even that he thinks he's going to hurt himself. I think it's that he's already sort of hurt. and that he knows that the extra running in center field and being asked to really, you know, sprint hard and cover that last, you know, few yards to the ball as a center fielder is required, is expected to do, sort of increases his odds of being injured, right? I mean, it's that he's not starting from health.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Does that unify what you're both saying?
I think it does.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I think that that's logical, and maybe that is the reason. So now that we have the why out of the way.
maybe. I mean, maybe. You know, maybe it's something else. Maybe he just looked at himself over running ground ball. He's like, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that routine. We saw it this week coming out of the All-Star break. He did that against the Cubbies in game one of the series.
Right. And that plays into my theory, which was that he's not interested in being out there anymore because he doesn't think it looks so great.
So the question is what the Mets do about it. And I would posit again that we have to go back, and I feel like a broken record on this, that we have to take advantage, that recognize these platoon splits in the outfielders because they're important. Lagares is very competent offensively against left-handers. So against lefties, he plays center. Cespedes shifts over to his preferred left field, and then Conforto and Granderson draw straws for right field, or Conforto plays first base or something. I don't think that's that complicated, and Terry Collins has one choice against left-handers. Does that sort of line up?
Yeah, I think against lefties, it's kind of a non-issue. With Lagares should be in there every single day that there's a lefty pitcher up.
Yep. And how would you sort out, Rob, how would you sort out the right field with Granderson and Conforto?
I brought this up on Twitter, and I was mauled might be the right word. I don't know. I suggested if you could find any kind of a taker for Granderson right now, maybe that's the way to go. Because, look, Cespedes is going to play if he's healthy, right? He's yep. going to be your left fielder. So, as you said, Lagares is the only logical choice for center field. This idea that just throwing Conforto out there is going to magically work for them, or that he's going to be competent enough to the point where it'll at least look similar to when Cespedes was out there, I don't think there's even a guarantee of that. So I think you have to realize that right field is your one spot, like you just said. And if Granderson's on the roster, can you really justify sitting him on the bench? I mean, I guess you could, but he's making how many millions this year? And is that going to go over in the clubhouse?
Yeah, let's put aside the millions. I mean, Granderson has this reputation, I don't know him personally, of being such a good guy. If the baseball decision, Maggie, against left-handers is Conforto against Granderson in right field, what are the parts to the equation you look at?
I mean, I would have Granderson out there, to be honest. Because right now, and I know everyone was kind of gunning for Conforto playing every day, but Granderson doesn't have platoon splits this year. And, you know, Conforto went down to Vegas, and he still wasn't facing left-handers. And I think that says a lot about what the organization feels he's ready for. And, you know, I think there may be good reason sometime next year to trade Granderson if Conforto really does establish that he is ready to take on that role. But right now, Granderson's the second-best hitter on the team. He has 16 home runs, and I think the last thing an offense-starved team can handle is losing one of its more consistent hitters. So to me, I mean, I think if the issue is that, you know, Granderson has to sit on the bench, you know, one out of every 5 days when there's a lefty up, and I still don't think that's the approach that the team would take, but if that's the situation, then that's what a contending team does. A contending team doesn't sell off a really valuable commodity mid-season because the alternative is having a deeper bench. I mean, the idea of not having Curtis Granderson on this team and still having Deaza on the team
is
like mind-boggling to me.
No, I hear you. I just think they're in such a weird spot, though, aren't they? I mean, just with the makeup of this overall roster, and especially with the outfield right now, they have guys playing out of position all over the place. Jose Reyes playing third is another one.
Okay, let's stay with. We'll get to Reyes in. I don't know if we'll get to Reyes in the show. Let's keep it on the outfield. So with the outfield, what we're really saying is against left-handers, the Terry Collins has one decision, and that's whether he plays Conforto or Granderson in right field. And it seems, and I think to Maggie's point, Granderson hasn't shown big splits this year. And frankly, since May 1, he's been a far superior hitter to Michael Conforto. If you take away the first 4 weeks of the season, it's not really all that close.
I think if you look at their seasons overall, you know, taking in the whole account of everything each has done, you know, Branderson is putting up numbers similar to what he did, not quite last year, but for the last several years in a row, and Conforto is still figuring it out.
Right. So you're comfortable with keeping him on the bench, with having Conforto play a bench role?
Yeah, against lefties, and, you know, keeping in mind that we're talking about maybe 20% of the game.
Right. So now the thornier issue is what happens in those other 80% when there's a right-hander on the hill, and the obvious solution is Cespedes plays in center field, Legarra sits, and Conforto and Granderson are in the two corners, but Cespedes says he doesn't want to play center field. So, Mackie, you're Terry Collins. With the next time that you see a right-hander on the mound, what is your first choice?
If, you know, gun to my head, I got to take Cespedes out of center, then I'll put Cespedes back into left where he is a plus defender. And then I'll suck it up and put Granderson back in center where he is certainly not a plus defender, but, you know, his biggest issue has always been his arm. So it's not, you know, it's not like it's that much bigger an issue in center than in right where it's already a problem, and just hope that Conforto can hack it in right. I think that for at least the next few weeks, that's the arrangement that they just kind of have to put together and hope for the best and use a lot of defensive replacements at the end of the game.
So doesn't sound like nobody's even brought up the idea of Conforto in center. Yeah.
I hate that idea.
No.
That kept me up.
I'm
a pretty good sleeper, but that thing kept me up last night thinking about that.
Yeah. It's awful.
No,
it's awful, right?
Look, the guy is—he's a fine corner outfielder, but he's just not fast enough to play center field. This isn't hard.
He has no experience there. I'm sure he would say that he would do anything for this team, which is good. That's the attitude you want to hear. But you've got to imagine he's just trembling when he thinks about the possibility of being out there.
Yeah, let's. I mean, we'll get. Yeah, exactly. The trembling, the psyche. There's the whole thing about, you know, he did. There's stuff about confidence, right? I mean, he didn't hit in the major league, so is he confident? Is he young? Is he? And then you put him in a position that he cannot handle in a new position. It'd be one thing if it was spring training, you had the whole winter there. He was looking fast enough to play it, but I think just on skills he stretched there. And then I think to Maggie's point, there's the psyche, but
so
I just don't think he can do it.
Where did the idea – I mean, obviously the idea came from Cespedes not willing to play center, but my greater point is, or question is, was this really something the Mets were contemplating?
If the Mets really contemplated everything that Terry Collins spat out during press conferences, this would be a pretty wacky time.
That's true.
But I'm sure they it's their job to just sort of think of everything. So I have no problem with them looking at their list of options at center and saying, could Conforto be there, like in an emergency, and thinking, yeah, I guess, kind of. I mean, this was the same organization that was talking about putting Jose Reyes there, who has never in his professional career stepped foot in the outfield.
Oh, that's the other thing. Oh,
that's a better idea than Conforto. At least Reyes can still run a little bit.
Can he, though, in the outfield? Get reads and have good, you know, get good reads on balls and have good instincts? I don't know. I've literally never seen him in that position. So it's
right.
I think there's a lot more than just speed in the outfield.
But, you know what, Toby?
If you were gonna do that, you need to give him a month in the minors to actually play center field.
Yeah, and
it's
good
just
luck
not
getting that.
It's just not fair to do that to him in the pennant race, and it's not fair to your pitchers, right? And the pitchers should mutiny at either of those ideas.
Right. And that you just said it was going to hit my point exactly. I can't stand this idea of either, forget Reyes even, just even Conforto in center field. Anybody other than Legarra in center field and maybe Granderson every once in a while, because as you said, he's been in the position. He could probably read baseballs pretty well still. I think he could probably go back on the ball okay. I'm okay with either one of those guys in center. Anything else is just awful for this pitching staff. You can't do that to them. You just went through that awful scenario last year where the middle infield couldn't pick a thing, and they hated it so much. And now you're going to change up center field behind them too. I think up the middle of defense, it's really important. I hate the idea of worsening that defense or lessening the skill level out there. Seems like that's every option that they're trying out right now, and that's what bothers me most.
But Rob, if you roll that way and you say Legarra's or Granderson has to play center field, and assume that Cespedes really is not willing to do that, And then, so against right-handers, you've got Cespedes in left, Lagares in center, and Granderson in right.
Right.
And then you're sitting Conforto, and basically you've called him up to sit.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No. And again, that's where I came up with the idea of the trading Granderson stuff. And I get Maggie's point completely that he's been more valuable. He does have the 16 home runs, which, by the way, a weird stat, 16 home runs, 28 RBI. It has nothing to do with him. I know it's guys getting on base, but yeah. Jesus. I mean, somebody get on base.
Well, he was a leadoff hitter for
the vast
majority of the season.
Some right. 7 and 8 hitters got to get on base more than a couple times, please. Anybody. But yeah, I think you're in a weird position where you're either sitting Conforto on the bench or you're sitting Nimmo on the bench, whoever's up, at least based on the current roster. Yeah.
I don't think it's that out of the realm of normal to have a relatively young player sitting once or twice a week. I look around the league and it seems like other teams do that.
Agreed.
I don't have a big issue with Conforto basically playing exactly as he did last year.
I think the only caveat is that Conforto at the beginning of the season, or at least it felt like from my perspective, was supposed to be a huge piece of this offense, right? Even though he's still young, he wasn't the rookie coming up that was spending his first couple of weeks in the big leagues, and you're going to see how things play out. This was a guy who I think had some expectation to be a middle of the order hitter at some point this year, and was at one point.
But didn't perform that way.
No, he didn't.
I don't think you can pretend. I don't think you can sort of close your eyes and wish away the last 3 months.
Agreed. No, I completely understand that. And so sitting him now, you can justify it, right?
I think in retrospect, and I count myself as guilty as anyone, I think we were probably a little too hot on Conforto and assuming that he was definitely ready to take on a big role like that just because, you know, it's such a delicate part of a player's development in terms of where he is. And yes, he was about to shift from a more platoon role into an everyday. You know, there were a lot of players hit stumbling blocks here. And I think it was very tempting to sort of brush past that and hope that he would overcome. But, you know, the reality is that he wasn't up to that challenge. But that's also okay that, you know, he is who he is and he's a very, very talented young man. But not every very, very talented young man is going to play 162 games a year.
That's true. I like Toby's idea of having him play first base, though. If you're going to play him in center field, why not just try out first base? I mean, at that point,
Loney's been pleasantly competent.
He has. Yeah. I know. You'd be losing the defense there, and Loney's been okay at the plate, too, as you said. A lot of line drives.
Makes some contact. I mean, he's a different profile hitter than seems like everybody else in the Mets lineup, as Keith pointed out the other night.
Right. But if you're desperate to get the, more potential in the lineup, I guess, the potentially bigger bat, maybe that's an answer.
Should the team be potentially playing this higher ceiling, lower floor kind of approach? You know, is that what's going to get them to the postseason, or should they be playing it safe? And what do those scenarios look like? You know, there are a lot of options. They're in sort of a weird in between spot right now.
Yeah,
and I think Loney's steadiness is fine. I mean, look, maybe he doesn't hit another home run the rest of the year, but he's getting on base and he's playing good defense at first base. He made a nice scoop, for example, at the end of Tuesday night's game at that wild double play to save maybe a game.
Yeah.
Maybe Loney is the guy you trade.
Maybe.
Do you think he's gonna have value? I mean, the Mets plucked him for nothing from the Padres. I mean, does he return a live double A arm or a cromulent reliever?
I bet he does. Remember, San Diego plucked Drew Pomeranz for nothing too, essentially, right? They traded Alonso to get him, and they turned him into a legitimate prospect. Granted, a much better player. So, but yeah, I think they could. I don't think they're going to trade Loney though. I think, as you said, they like the steadiness over there at first base, and they love the glove. It would look so much better if you were just getting more offensive production. Period, especially out of places like third base. And I know we're not getting consistent production at second base anymore. New Walker hasn't been so solid since really that tremendous April. So maybe if they can just find a way to get some offense, none of this will matter. Defense will figure itself out.
Yeah, the defense, I mean, I feel like, even if we are with all these kind of shuffling around, even if we are kind of knocking the defense down a notch or two, defense wasn't exactly that great to begin with, and you know it's not going to be a significant, meaningful shift.
Appreciate it. So we all agree the Mets should hit more.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
And not give up as many hits.
Yeah, right. To the red, that helps too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So good strategy, everybody. Maggie, you can read Maggie's stuff on Mets blog at SNY.TV. Maggie, what's your next thing coming up there on Mets blog? Do you know?
Oh, I'm definitely working on something really exciting right now about baseball.
Good.
I can't wait to read it. How about that?
Sounds good.
Maggie Wiggin, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Rob, I got to say, I don't envy Terry Collins on making the choices on those outfield, frankly, because he doesn't have a perfect choice right now. So every day there will be trade-offs, and he leaves himself open for second-guessing, and some days it's going to work, and some days it's not.
Right.
So it's sort of a very uncomfortable middle right now, I think. And, again, problems of too much talent or awkward talent tend to solve themselves. Guys get hurt, guys get hot, guys get crazy cold. So
yeah,
I don't think it'll be a long-term problem, but it's definitely something to deal with.
Yeah. And as we said at the end of that conversation with Maggie, as long as the guys are all hitting and they're driving in a ton of runs, ultimately, aside from Conforto, I really don't care who plays center field, whether it's Lagares or Granderson, this offense needs to get going.
Yeah. And both of them have trade-offs, right? I mean, Lagares doesn't hit righties much, and Granderson probably can't play there anymore.
So. Yeah, exactly. This will be fun to watch.
Both of those, you sort of put your hands over your eyes and go, ooh. Okay, yeah. So now we promised. So you're in Pittsburgh today, actually. I'm in Washington, D.C. But we've both been to a lot of ballparks. I have not been to all 30, but I've been to a bunch. You've been to a bunch.
I have.
So you put up a top five list of your favorite ballparks the other day. So let's start there, shall we?
Yeah, and the motivation for that, again, was that I was at PNC last night for my first Pirate game here, and I've got to tell you, that automatically jumped to the top of the list. That ballpark, from the backdrop with the Clemente Bridge, which is actually the 6th Street Bridge, they renamed it, of course, and the cityscape in the background, it's so amazing, and the field itself is beautiful, the amenities inside the ballpark, the food was good. They gave me this helmet ice cream. I'm a big helmet ice cream guy. Helmet ice cream for $5, and it had two scoops. It was huge.
Can't you get that anywhere?
I don't think for that much money. So anyway, that it automatically jumped up to number one on my list. I love PNC Park.
All right, so what's the rest of the list?
My top five, and again, I'm a little West Coast biased, I think, with this list, but really, these are my favorite parks. I love them. San Diego, to me, Petco, is the most underrated of the new ballparks. All the attention goes to San Francisco, especially, which I love, and that's going to be number three on my list, and PNC, of course. I love San Diego. Again, an awesome backdrop beyond the outfield fences. They used to have a beach in right center field, which is kind of plays off the San Diego theme. Again, great amenities and such. I love that park. San Francisco's number three. How could you not pick it? It's just that awesome.
It's a great park.
Another one that's a little underrated to me is Safeco. And maybe it's because a lot of people haven't been there, right? Because how many people go to Seattle unless you're on the West Coast? And I had the pleasure of being able to do that a few times. I love Safeco. And I love it for the press amenities too, which are just fantastic. Amazing press box, amazing locker rooms, tons of room everywhere. Love Safeco. And Dodger. I picked Dodger. I love the backdrop at Dodger Stadium. It's just unique. And I know it's not the oldest of the parks, but it's really close now. It's number three on the list of oldest parks. Really love Dodger Stadium. What did you have that was different? I forgot.
I will say this. I haven't been to PNC and Safeco. So we can start there. That's one of the discrepancies. And I put the two old guys on there. I start with Wrigley and Fenway. And then I love AT&T. I've had too many good times at AT&T. Great ballpark. You got the bay. Everything's about it is just well done. And Petco, I'm with you. Bonus points for being in San Diego. Weather's always great. Great place to watch a game.
Yeah.
And then the fifth spot for me is tough. And the selection choices would be something like, you know, the choices would be Camden Yards in Baltimore.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Great spot. You got the bars across the street. City Field, which I actually really like the sight lines. If you're going to go straight new, that's fine.
Yep. I love City as well. Yes.
Kauffman's underrated.
It is. Agreed.
LA has the views, but meh. I just saw some meh park from the outside. So I went City, just straight Homer style on that. Because okay. I really do like watching a game at City. If you want food, the food's really good. There are lots of good choices. And the sidelines are good. And
no, I agree.
The Mets,
I agree.
And the Mets play there. 360 walk around, all the good stuff, all the modern stuff. You know,
but no backdrop at all. No backdrop. None. And that hurts.
But LA is so boring architecturally. It's just like this. It's a circle. It's a circle with a great view.
Yeah, but I mean, palm trees in the outfield and Vin Scully in the press box. It's got a unique feel.
So that points out something. I mean, if you're ranking them on press amenities, you probably would drop Wrigley and Fenway because those locker rooms stink.
Yeah,
they're clubhouses in baseball, but those clubhouses are brutal and a terrible way to do your job if you're press. But for a fan experience, I just don't think you can beat the old ones. They're in the city. You can get there on public transportation. They're part of the neighborhood. You walk out of Wrigley, you're in Wrigleyville. Fenway's right in Boston. I mean, the experience, you know, look, baseball has spent the last 20 years trying to mimic those two originals.
No, agreed. And I actually was just at Fenway about a month ago and Lansdowne Street. I'd never been there since I guess all these bars had popped up. Or maybe I'm wrong and I just don't remember them because it's been so long. But all those bars and restaurants back there, I thought that was amazing. And I had a great experience at Fenway Park. It didn't feel as old as it really is almost when you're inside. It was really nice and bright. It looks like they painted everything fresh. So I enjoyed that. I think 6 through 10 is harder. I won't go into all 6 through 10, but as you said, Camden would definitely be in there. And I love Kauffman. I've got 6 ballparks left, Toby, on the list. So I haven't seen Minnesota, which is obviously relatively new. I've got to see that. I haven't seen Toronto. I've never been there. I've got Colorado left, which is somewhat in the new, you know, realm.
Speaking of views, yeah.
And Atlanta, which is going to go away. So I don't know if I'll have an opportunity. I'm going to have to try to sneak down there. I've heard it's terrible, though, and an awful neighborhood as well. So I haven't been there. And I've been to Houston. Houston's the other one for me.
Yeah, I don't think the neighborhood's that bad around Turner. It's just there's nothing. It's awful. It depends what you mean by awful. There's not much there.
Yeah, I heard it's just kind of blah. So anyway, but 6 through 10 be harder. That's my top 5 for now.
You've got some that I haven't checked off either. Maybe we'll do a ballpark tour later this summer.
We should.
Or at least one trip.
Toronto for sure. That's a must.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to Toronto. That'd be fun. Mostly Mets from Toronto.
See? Ooh, I like that idea. Jeff Goldman, take Toronto on the road. Mets on the road to Toronto.
Anyway, all right. So we talked a little outfield. We talked a little ballparks. Point is go. Baseball's fun. Big thanks to Rob. Big thanks to Maggie. Don't forget, you can check out all of SNY.TV's original podcasts, Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, recruiting, whatever you're into. Just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. Please make sure to rate and review the channel. And this week, Mike Piazza episode on the Mets blog Q&A cast, Matt Cerrone talks one-on-one with the Mets legend and soon-to-be Hall of Famer. I'll be listening. You should, too. So, for Maggie, for Rob, I'm Toby. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.